Welcome into another edition of the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. Eric Pfeiffer here. The Indiana Ag Policy Podcast is presented by the Indiana Corn Growers Association and the Indiana Soybean Alliance. We thank you for joining us. Today's podcast comes from downtown Indianapolis, the Indiana Farm Bureau building. I'm here with some folks at Indiana Farm Bureau. Kendall Culp, the Indiana Farm Bureau Vice President. Hello, Kendall.
Good afternoon, Eric.
Thanks. Thanks, Kendall. You thought we'd been doing this podcast for so long, it turned from morning to afternoon. For full clarity, this is the third time we've tried this. We've had some technical difficulties. That's the reason for the chuckles. Thank goodness for the Indiana Farm Bureau comms folks here. They're able to help me out, so thank you very much. Andy Tower is here as well. Even after three tries, I didn't take the time to look up his title. You think maybe in the meantime I would have done that. He does policy work here for Indiana Farm Bureau. Policy guy, Andy Tower. Hello, yeah. Andy.
Afternoon, Eric.
So we're going to talk about a couple of issues here today on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. Lost farmland. We're going to talk property taxes. I imagine that property taxes will be the top issue come the time for the Indiana State Legislature to come into session here. I want to talk about this lost farmland report, though, that came from ISDA a little over a month ago. Kendall, this has been a big bill for you. Nearly 350,000 acres lost between 2010 and 2022. And really, if you think about the past couple of years here, 2023, 2024, I would only imagine that a lot of that has ramped up since then. So we may need another report to really tell us the full story. But let's just talk about this report, some of the things you've heard since then. This was a bill that you put forward, really asking ISDA for the data. And I think really the crux of it was, hey, we knew that we've lost farmland. Like, duh. We know this, right? It's out there. We can see it. We just didn't know how much. Now that we do know how much, what do we do? That's the question we pose to you, Mr. Representative.
Well, we're happy to receive this information, which was released the 1st of July. 1.89% is the amount of farmland lost in the last 12 years. Again, it may not seem like a big number. 345,000 acres is certainly a large number, I think, when you look at it from that aspect. But again, moving forward, when you kind of break that down in those 12-year increments, that's a double-digit percentage loss in an average American's lifetime, and that's significant. And so in speaking early on last year with Representative Aylesworth about some possible legislation, he said, really, we need the data. We need to be able to back up whatever is brought forward. And so that was the reason for the legislation, the reason for the report. And actually, you talked about keeping it up to date, keeping it current. ISDA did recommend that they do this at least every 5 years to keep this. Now we've got the baseline done. Let's keep that current as we go forward. And so I think we're going to see. I know we'll see some legislation come forward on this. And I think what's important about this piece, when you ask people about losing farmland in the non-ag sector, it's all about food security. And it's like, oh my gosh, where's our food going to come from if we're losing all these acres? So it's top of mind with a lot of the public.
As we look at this, you know, Andy, from the Farm Bureau standpoint, are we getting feedback here? Like, what are we thinking here from the Farm Bureau standpoint?
So I think we hear a lot from our members in terms of that food security, farmland preservation. As Kendall alluded to, I mean, we now have the baseline. One of the other things that Director Lamb highlighted in sharing the report is a lot of the renewable conversation isn't captured in that data pre-2022. So what you alluded to, even in the last couple of years, those numbers are probably skewed a little bit more. And so I think as we hear from our members, it's how do we find that balance between personal property rights, farmland preservation, food security, and if anybody has the solution to that or that magic bullet, please share that with me, because it's really tough for us, our members, to kind of balance those three competing interests.
You mentioned, you know, the energy, the renewable energy. So solar is not included in this data, and that's going to be a big sticking point here for a lot of folks. I've had this question asked of me a lot, primarily because people think of me as some sort of ag expert, and I have to remind them that's not the case. I'm smart enough to ask some other people who are, you know, supposed ag experts. That's not me. But they ask what my take is on solar, and I often tell them what I believe to be the Indiana Farm Bureau stance, which is you guys want that to be a local decision, right? Is that what the Farm Bureau stance yep. is, that should be a local kind of county level decision on solar and how that should be put out there?
Absolutely. I think we heard loud and clear from our members maybe two summers ago at our delegate session that those discussions around siting renewable solar absolutely need to be handled at the local level. And so, yeah, we continue to support that. And again, it also comes back to personal property rights, which has been a long-standing tenet of Indiana Farm Bureau. So, again, personal property rights, local control is where we want to see those conversations continue to occur.
Now, Kendall, as a farmer, okay, so we're talking about all this lost farmland. I kind of take you, as I look at you, I've known you for a long time, Kendall. I bet you're a country music fan. I don't know, are you a 90s country fan, or are you a current country fan?
Oh, no, I would be a 90s.
You're a 90s guy?
Oh, yeah.
When I look at Andy, I bet he was probably, like, into the hair bands back in the 80s. He was probably part of one. Back when he had hair, I bet he was
when
part
I
of
had
one.
Hair, yeah.
I bet he's probably into, like, alt-rock right now. But there are two songs on the country charts right now, okay? The country top 40. Cody Johnson and Dirt Cheap and Justin Moore, This Is My Dirt. And it's talking about these farmers who, you know, developers are coming to them and offering them all this money, and they're like, nope, can't do it. This is my dirt. Gotta hang on to it. Where's the song about the developers coming to the door and it's like, oh, hell yeah, give me all that money, and here's what I'm going to do with my retirement? Because that's kind of what's happening, right? And you can't blame these guys, can you? You can't blame these farmers. It's a lot of money.
So you've got to look at ag, and everyone has a little different perspective and situation. In my case, I've got a son following me. My daughter farms as well. In a lot of cases, these farmers are retirement age, and they don't have anybody following them up. So they are looking at their farmland as an investment, as their 401k, their retirement plan, and in some cases that's a pretty big incentive. That's a pretty big temptation in some cases. And so if that's what they want to do with their property and it fits within all the local ordinances and the rules and regulations, then that's kind of their decision to do that. On the other hand, if you're looking more to the future and you want to make sure you're continuing to grow crop and produce food on your farm, and maybe it's a long-time family, generational family farm, then sure, maybe it makes sense for you to continue that in agricultural operation.
And that's what you're talking about with, you know, local, right? Like, it's got to be up to the farmer.
Absolutely. And I think the other scenario we've heard from a few members is, you know, they've got that next generation that wants to come back, but here's an opportunity to maybe sell, lease a small portion that they can then refinance debt, and it makes the trajectory for that next generation so much different than what they're dealing with today. So there's all kinds of different scenarios, but yes, absolutely. At the end of the day, it comes back to the individual farmer, that family, what their long-term plans are, and then ultimately that local conversation.
Now, Kendall, when we spoke about this previously, you talked about, you know, if we're really concerned about this issue of lost farmland, then what we really need to be concerned about is the farmer and how we can take care of the farmer and keep people farming. Because if people stop farming, we're going to lose more farmland. I think that makes sense. So one, in speaking with, and again, we should mention for folks that maybe missed our very first Indiana Ag Policy podcast, yes, Kendall has a role as Indiana Farm Bureau Vice President. He is also an Indiana representative. In conversations with other members of the Indiana House, maybe members of the Indiana Senate that you've spoken with, one, are we concerned about this? Are folks that are there at the State House, are they concerned about this report?
Well, absolutely they are, and I heard a lot of feedback, and again, a lot of these are suburban and urban legislators that have talked the report, and they're concerned. I mean, again, 345,000 acres, that's a big number, and so it like I said, it goes back to food security. And if you're representing an urban district, food is already a big concern in a lot of those cases in those urban areas. And food access, food deserts, those are all issues that really are top of mind. And so I think really everyone has a really good understanding and can kind of connect the dots on this. And so we know where the food comes from. I mean, legislators understand it comes from the farms. It's from the farmer. But if it gets to their consumer or gets to their constituency or the consumers, they know it where it has to start. And so is legislation necessary? Well, we're going to find out, hopefully in this next session, just how big of an issue this is.
Well, that leads to question number two. So question one, are we worried? Yes. Question two, what kind of legislation can there be? What types of things can we do to tell the farmer, yeah, we are worried about you? And that, I think, maybe leads into the next part of this discussion, which is property taxes. I mean, for me, this seems to make sense that taking care of our farmers maybe starts there. And Andy, I'll let you lead this conversation here to kick things off, because I know that this is going to be a very, very hot topic at the State House. And this may be the thing that Farm Bureau spends a majority of time on. Because this is what farmers are concerned about right now, and I know the legislative session doesn't start for some time.
Absolutely. Property taxes is an issue that we've heard from our members really starting last spring as the assessment notices and property tax bills came in. Katrina Hall, that leads a lot of these conversations on our team's phone, has just been inundated with calls from members, you know, increases in anywhere from 20% to, we've heard some as high as 70%. And so as that ability to keep farmers on the farm farming, we need to find a solution, because not only are we seeing property taxes go up, but it's happening at the same time as the general farm economy is trending the other way. So all the different pressures that our members are feeling at the farm gate level, but this may be one of the things that from a state level that we have an ability to impact and influence. And absolutely, as you kind of alluded to, highly anticipate this being the number one issue that will be on the minds of our members, and we get to the State House in January that we'll be advocating for.
What are you seeing, Kendall, in the way of property taxes? I mean, is this going to be the top thing? Is this something that you're already starting to chat with about folks there at the State House?
I think so, for sure. As you know, being a budget year, there's going to be a lot of tax implications throughout the budget and accompanying bills. But when you talk to farmers and you talk about taxes, I mean, you don't even have to say what tax we're talking about. We know they're talking about property taxes. Actually, Farm Bureau has a policy that we support income tax. We do not favor elimination of Indiana's income tax because we think that's a fair way to collect taxes. You had a broader base. You have more people paying into it. You're not singled out as just because you own your home or own a farm or own a business. You're singled out to help share the burden of local education, local costs for local government, that sort of thing. So we have it's really interesting. Our members are very passionate about taxes, property taxes specifically. But the disparity within, I mean, I have, from a neighboring county, just, you know, one county over, their taxes are over twice per acre of what mine are. And part of that reason is because our county a long time ago adopted local option income taxes to help buy down that cost. So how can we help support agriculture, and how can we support the farmer? Definitely property tax relief would be one of those ways.
How does the statewide election coming up later this year impact those discussions? You chuckle a little bit, Andy. We've got this happening.
Yep.
And I'll point out that we do have a Lieutenant Governor debate happening here in just a couple of weeks at the Indiana State Fair that Indiana Farm Bureau is sponsoring. Also, the folks at Indiana Corn and Soy, Country Mark, Ice Miller. I don't know who else I'm forgetting here. I hope I'm not forgetting anyone. Hoosier Act today will be live streaming the event, and we'll be there on site. The Purdue Extension Building at the Indiana State Fairgrounds. We hope people can either show up or tune into the live stream at HoosierAgToday.com. Micah Beckwith on the Republican side, Terry Gooden on the Democrat side. That Lieutenant Governor debate will be happening. I'll be up there asking questions. In the way of property taxes, what question you want me to ask, Andy? I mean, what do we need to know?
So I think, you know, really, we need to hear from those candidates and those campaigns. You know, where does farmland property tax fit into the equation for any type of tax reform, and what type of analytics have they done on that? So we've actually, in the last week or so, we've saw the Braun camp issued kind of some information on part of their plan, you know, interesting enough, but we need to see some analytics behind that, because that's one of the things, you know, you think about farmers, they're very data driven. So show me how this is going to benefit us. And I think the other piece of the conversation with property taxes, I mean, and our members fully understand this, so much of all that goes to local government. And so if we're going to make some adjustments, if we're going to give some relief to farmers, what else has to move? And so, you know, and as we think about here at Indiana Farm Bureau, rural viability has been a big priority for us the last several years. And so, you know, we want to get some tax relief, but we also have to look at it in context of that bigger picture in terms of that rural viability, because whether it's education funding, police and fire, you know, our members need those things as well. And so where do we find that balance? And I think big picture for those candidates and those campaigns, how do we strike that right balance? Because we've heard, and we heard last year, and actually going back to the previous budget session, you know, we've heard a lot of conversation from homeowners that have saw their assessed values and property taxes go up, so they contribute to a lot bigger voting block than our members. And so how do we make sure that farmers have a seat at the table as part of that conversation going forward with whatever the solution looks like?
It does seem as though farmers get singled out because their occupation does require simply more land than everyone else. I mean, do large corporations have to pay the same thing? I mean, it does. And even then, large corporations, they've got a little bit more behind them than what a single farmer does. You would think that this would just come out to common sense. I'm sorry, we're talking about policy and government,
yeah,
aren't we?
Yeah.
I sometimes forget that common sense doesn't really fit in this podcast. I apologize. Sheesh, I forget. You guys can't really comment on that either, can you? You got to go work on at the State House. I don't. But Kendall, just as we do look toward the legislative session here, what types of things are you hearing might be tossed around as solutions? Anything at this point?
I think it's a little bit early yet to know details of specifics, but I would say that I think one thing that we're going to be looking at here at Farm Bureau is, you have to remember, anytime there's tweaks or there's relief given, it's at the cost of another taxpayer. It's at the expense of another taxpayer. And so back 9 years ago, we had a big effort. We got property tax relief. Senator Hirschman then carried that legislation, lowered Farm Bureau's property tax burden, but we knew it was going to build back. And that's exactly what's happened. Here we are going to be 10 years later. Now we've built back way above where it was before. You've got that perfect storm with low commodity prices, increasing property taxes, and it's kind of like, well, that doesn't affect the ability to pay. And so I think that has to be. We need, Farm Bureau is looking for permanent and lasting relief, not simply a shift. Because anytime you're shifting, like I said, you're that burden goes to someone else. If there is a specific cut, now you're cutting revenue that funds local government, that funds your local police department, right? That funds local schools and cities and towns. So then you're going to have those folks that are be coming back at you. And I think if we're going to do this, we really, and it's not easy. Just to get a tweak through the State House is not an easy thing to do, because even though this is local dollars, right, the state sets the parameters, we set the structure of how this is assessed and collected. And so we really need to look at long term and how this is going to affect long term. And those proposals and that planning doesn't come easy.
And I know this is something you're very passionate about, being a former county commissioner. I mean, this the rural viability conversation is something that you take to heart very much so.
And look at my legislative district. It's four very rural counties, and so lots of small communities, and they're all saying the same. I think the thought is these locals are just flush with cash. They're getting all these property taxes. And again, we have controls set in place, and as you know, if your assessed value grows, then your rate should drop to compensate for that. The system does work, but it gets down to, well, who's paying, and who's paying the largest burden for that? And you know, there's no getting around it. And so anytime you increase an exemption, then that just means someone else is really paying for that relief that you're getting. So we really need to find something that's lasting and permanent.
So when we talk about, you know, it's not easy to get these tweaks through at the State House. What's going to be needed? I think back to, you know, some years ago when we were trying to get the insurance effort through, mm-hmm. from Farm Bureau. I imagine it's going to take that type of effort from Farm Bureau members and really from members of other organizations. I mean, Farm Bureau, the folks at Corn and Soy have said, yep. Farm Bureau is going to be carrying the torch on this property tax thing, and we're the ag community is going to have to come together on this. Whether you're a Farm Bureau member, corn, soy, I mean, everybody's going to have to come together on this because it's affecting farmers across the state. But we're going to need a presence at the State House to get this taken care of, Andy.
Absolutely. We're going to have a big presence at the State House. And quite frankly, yesterday morning had a breakfast with Steve Howell with Indiana Corn and Soybean, and he was asking the very same question. What can we do to help you all move this forward as we get to the General Assembly? I think what we're going to need is, those farmers, those members in the rural communities, you know, not only at the State House, but between now and January, talking to your elected officials, talking to those candidates that are up for election, letting them know, you know, the pressure that these increase in property taxes are putting on your livelihood, on your properties, but also talking to them about some potential solutions. I mean, I think that's one of the things that I really pride ourselves at Farm Bureau. I mean, our members identify a lot of challenges, but that's where, you know, working through our tax task force and some other, our policy advisory groups, we bring solutions to the table. And I think as we continue to work through this process, the late to here in the summer and through early fall, starting to identify some of those potential solutions. But we will need that entire collective barnyard there pulling the rope the same way. And we'll be working with our marketing team and some others to get that information out to folks. But just having that collective barnyard presence at the State House throughout the session is going to be vitally important. And, you know, I think folks like Chairman Thompson, I mean, coming from a rural district, he understands the challenges that our members are facing. But making sure at the end of the day, when those elected officials have to vote, making sure that they have the backing of their constituents back home. So they can look them in the eye and say, yeah, we made the right vote. And that doesn't come without members showing up and advocating on various different positions.
And it's a grassroots organization, right, Kendall? We need the grassroots showing up.
Absolutely. And in the past, they've come through, and I think they will again. They're very passionate about this issue.
And I imagine this won't be the last time we discuss it on this particular podcast as well. Let's take a time out here. When we come back, we'll wrap things up and talk about some other priorities at the State House for Farm Bureau. The Indiana Ag Policy Podcast is presented by the Indiana Corn Growers Association and the Indiana Soybean Alliance.
There is strength in numbers. That's why the Indiana Soybean Alliance membership and policy and Indiana Corn Growers Association need you. These organizations represent Indiana soybean and corn farmers on critical and regulatory issues affecting their industry. Along with support from the national organizations, National Corn Growers Association and American Soybean Association, the Indiana members help determine public policy positions on critical issues, including farm bills, trade policy, and ethanol and biodiesel legislation. Become a member of Indiana Soybean Alliance membership, Indiana Corn Growers Association, or both. Visit incornandsoy.org to select a membership. That's incornandsoy.org.
Well, And we're back here on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. Kendall Culp and Andy Tower are my guests from Indiana Farm Bureau. And Andy, the legislative session still a little ways away, but really not that far away. It's rapidly approaching. I know it seems a ways away, but not too far. What other issues are we likely to talk about? I'm guessing, we both just said it at the same time here during the break, this one's happening in my neck of the woods, there in Tippecanoe County. Water.
Yeah, water will absolutely be top of our priority list for our members. another issue that we've developed an internal task force to really dig into water quantity. We've talked water quality a lot here in Indiana over the last decade or so, but now we're talking about water quantity, a lot of it driven by the LEAP project in Lebanon and the notion of potentially transferring 100 million gallons of water. But I think one of the things that's really shocked many of us here on the team and our members is just, you know, we are blessed here in Indiana with a lot of water, but we do have pockets of the state where what the volume of water needed for even agriculture operations is challenged. But the other thing we've also found, especially in the southern third of our state, there's already a lot of water that's piped around to different communities that folks have taken for granted. So as we think about water quality, how do we set a framework so we don't find ourselves in the situation of some of our western brethren out in, you know, Arizona, Colorado, when we're in a crisis? So we'll be looking for some comprehensive, maybe statewide water policy, and as we think about agriculture, making sure agriculture has some protections. Right now, small rural homeowners are really top of the list if we get into emergency situation, but we think about how blessed we are here in Indiana from corn and soybeans, but also our livestock friends. I mean, we've got a lot of livestock operations, and those critters take a lot of water on a daily basis. So if we happen to get in a stress situation, that they too can operate. So water definitely will be towards the top of the list for Farm Bureau.
I know you've been talking some water, Kendall. It's going to be an issue at the State House as well. Some folks there already talking about some things.
I think it's going to come from several different angles, from an economic development standpoint, from a use standpoint, right? Agriculture is going to want to make sure that they're involved there. Again, it ties in so closely with food, because you look at priorities and you say, well, where does a center pivot irrigator on a farm need to come in? You think, well, that's not real high priority. Well, wait a minute, we're growing food under that pivot, right? And so food is obviously important to all of us. So I think it's going to be important to us to just kind of keep beating the drum and just make sure that someone's there to tell Ag's story, to just show how important this is.
I think it leads to maybe a larger conversation, and maybe a question I do ask, not that I'm giving questions away here for that Lieutenant Governor debate, but maybe some conversations about how the Indiana Economic Development Corporation might operate under these new administrations. We talk about the LEAP project and how some of that really works under a new administration, talking about farmland preservation, how all of that was purchased, how the water all works. It kind of all ties in. So other priorities that you see, Kendall or Andy, that you want to take on here?
I would, obviously, there's, you know, we've been talking about land use. There's a lot of land use issues, but I think specifically, and I'm going to go back to ag for a minute, back to that food security, and what does ag look like in Indiana for generations to come? And as we see consolidation, and you just see a changing economy, and it's such a deep financial investment in agriculture today, is how does a young person get started to farm? And if you don't have a family member that brings you in, it is so difficult. You know, there aren't that many first generation farmers. We have some. Our president Randy Crone's a first generation farmer, but that's not the case in most instances. So I think we need to look at incentives to get help young beginning farmers come into the business in Indiana. We have all kinds of incentives to bring in business and industry, and we kind of think ag is not a business for some reason. And again, there's a lot of ways you can do that. Pennsylvania has a great statute to give a tax incentive to the retiring farmer that brings in a young beginning farmer. You think about that. A retiring farmer is selling their last crop, has machinery to liquidate, and has no incoming expense for the next year's crop to offset that with. A tax credit really is beneficial to them. Hopefully we can look at some legislation on that. I think that'll be something that should get a lot of discussion in the upcoming session.
Well, why would anybody want to jump in? Property taxes are too dang high. I mean, my goodness. No, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, there are new farmer incentives from USDA out there, but is it enough? I wouldn't think so. Any other priorities that we're tackling right now, Andy? I mean, we talked about some of the same priorities that Farm Bureau has had over the years. You can look toward rural viability. We can look toward broadband access. Are there going to be any dollars for that? It's not gone to the back burner, but it's still out there that there's not enough money out there to really make that project anything that's going to go anywhere big anytime soon. That's a lot of dollars.
Right. There's a lot of dollars there. I think the other thing too, I mean, it is a budget year, so I mean, we'll be working with our other partners, whether it be State Department of Agriculture, Board of Animal Health, the other barnyard agencies, to make sure, you know, as we continue to advance the industry, that they have the dollars to do what they need to do to support our members and support the industry overall. But I think, you know, tying into the overall food security and you know, whether it's property taxes, the water, maybe some of these state agency budgets. I mean, we are so blessed here in Indiana to have the robust agriculture industry that we do, and we don't want to lose that. And we want to make sure we continue to preserve it, build it, so we do pass it on to the next generation. And so as we think about food security, you know, and even at a macro level, this year our ag trade deficit is going to be as high as it's been in a long time. And so how do we make sure, from an Indiana perspective, that we're doing our part to not let that go the other direction?
Gentlemen, thanks for joining me today. Appreciate the time. Don't be strangers, because we're going to have to keep talking about this property tax thing. I don't think it's going away. I think farmers are going to want to know the progress and where we're at here, especially as the legislative session really kicks up here. Come January, we're going to want to know where this thing stands. So, Andy, Kendall, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
The Indiana Ag Policy Podcast is presented by the Indiana Corn Growers Association and the Indiana Soybean Alliance. Find more at incornandsoy.org, and is a production of Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.